Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, we'll go to Halifax to meet up with community workers taking part in the International Overdose Awareness Day.
Overdose does not discriminate. It can happen to anybody. It can happen to children after surgery. It can happen to our grandparents. It can happen to anybody in this earth. And we really need to be talking about all the ways that we can prevent it.
Kitsilas Geothermal Company has entered into an agreement with Shell Canada. They will work on their fuel for reconciliation drilling projects.
Having an Indigenous nation whose traditional territory is where this project will be, this is a continuation of day one that began thousands of years ago. And it's just now a more modern use of that energy source.
We'll pull up the Viewpoints Periscope and go story hopping to Quebec, British Columbia, New Brunswick, and Ontario. And we'll also take a long walk in the Revelstoke Forest for some fresh air and mushrooms.
Oh, when you don't know the things that I know, you go out in the woods and you just kind of step over all this stuff and you don't understand what it is until you find out, and then the whole world opens up to you in a whole different way that you've never seen it. And all of a sudden, there's all these amazing things.
Oh, here we go,
guys. Our first chanterelles.
Oh, nice.
Welcome to Viewpoints.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mosnay in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
Well, August 31st marked the International Overdose Awareness Day. Outreach workers and community members from all over the country gathered to remember those who have lost their lives to opioid overdoses and to find solutions to the problem. In Halifax, Nova Scotia, Direction 180's Housing Clinic hosted their 9th annual March and Barbecue event at the Commons. Direction 180 is a program that was initiated in 2001 by the Mi'kmaq Native Friendship Center. Since then, it has developed and implemented over 50 health promotion and research initiatives to improve health and social outcomes for people who use substances. A method of overdose prevention is, of course, to carry naloxone. Naloxone is a medication designed to rapidly reverse or block the effects of fentanyl, heroin, morphine, and codeine. Ashton Manctello, an outreach worker at Halifax's Mainline Needle Exchange, says that some 1,250 lives were lost to overdoses since 2009, and numbers have been increasing in the last 2 years. Urgent actions need to be taken, community workers say, such as adding detox centers and safe injection sites, increasing organizations' funding, and adding more mental health programs. Reporter Sarah Gouda was at the Common in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
My name's Krista Miller, and I work for the SHARPS program under Direction 180.
And can you tell us why is it important for us to be out here today?
We need to take some time to remember the lives that were lost due to accidental opioid poisoning, as well as make some calls for action.
What are some misconceptions you find around opioid poisoning?
One thing for sure is that prescription use as well as misuse pose the same risk for opioid overdose, and that's something we definitely need to be talking about.
What are some methods of prevention?
Some methods of prevention for Overdose Awareness Day is always to carry naloxone. We have those kits available to give out anytime for free in Nova Scotia. Also, know the signs and symptoms of an overdose. That's a great way to be able to prevent one from happening.
Can you share with us some signs and symptoms?
Yeah, so blue lips, pale fingers. Sometimes they have the death rattle sound in their breathing, unconscious. A good way to try to wake somebody up if you think they may be experiencing an overdose is to actually threaten to give them naloxone. It's going to put them in such a bad state of precipitated withdrawal, they're not going to like it, and they will say, do not inject me with naloxone. So.
What are some important facts you think Dalhousie students and people in general should know about overdose awareness?
Overdose does not discriminate. It can happen to anybody. It can happen to children after surgery. It can happen to our grandparents. It can happen to anybody in this earth. And we really need to be talking about all the ways that we can prevent it.
Is there anything else you would like to add for Dalhousie audiences?
make calls for action, talk about safe supply. Safe supply would be a great way to prevent accidental opioid poisoning in HRM.
So my name is Martin Sabrin. I come from Picmobers First Nation. I'm here just to support like what's going on, the cause. I know a few years ago I overdosed as well, and it was the naloxone that saved me. So I'm here to show my support, because if it weren't for that drug, I wouldn't be here today. And just to sort of spread awareness.
Why is it important for people to show up today?
I think it's very important, again, just to spread awareness, you know, because a lot of people don't know about it. Like my mom, for one, she was the kind of, like, she had a negative thought on the naloxone and addiction. She used to think that, like, oh, I don't know why we're spending so much money on naloxone and for people just to keep using it, you know, to keep overdosing. And then until eventually I overdosed, and her perception of the drug changed. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you so much. Is there anything else you would like to add for Dalhousie audiences?
No, it's just don't do drugs. And honestly, like, it is okay to get help. And if you really want recovery, it will happen for you. So just don't give up on it.
My name's Siddell Ross. I'm with Mosh Housing First.
And what are we doing here today, Siddell?
We're bringing awareness to those that have lost their lives through overdose. And, you know, I believe suicide prevention as well. But I believe today is International Overdose Day. So we're here just to, you know, bring recognition to, you know, safe use and, you know, recognizing those that lost their lives in the battle.
And can you tell us a little bit about your organization?
Our organization is there to support those in need. We facilitate a lot of different supports to a lot of organizations. Right now, this is one of the causes that we're supporting through overdose awareness. And just to be their support for one another in these tough times.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
The Calgary-based Kitsilis Geothermal Company, also known as KJI, announced that they have entered into a joint development agreement with Shell Canada. This will enable them to go forward with their geothermal drilling projects. The energy produced will be used as an alternative energy source for industrial heating in the Terrace, BC area. KJI has been working with Calgary-based Borealis Geopower for the past decade on a multi-phase project called Fuel for Reconciliation, emphasizing economic reconciliation for the Kitsilis Nation. Journalist Morgan Boudin spoke with Borealis President Alison Thompson.
Economic reconciliation, we've named this project Fuel for Reconciliation. Geothermal is often thought of, you know, as kind of a tourist attraction, and it's also a fuel, though. And so that's why it's important for us to have the word fuel in our project name. And then any type of revenue that would come off the project could be used for own source revenue for Kitsilis First Nation.
If the project is successful, Kitsilis will be able to generate an independent revenue through the production and sale of the renewable energy. However, geothermal energy is not a new concept, which is why Thompson explained they wanted to work with Kitsilis.
With Indigenous people the world over, they are the first stewards of geothermal energy. People have formed encampments or societies around, especially in cold climates, hot springs as a way to cook, as a way to bathe, as a way to heat up in the cold winters. And so having an Indigenous nation whose traditional territory is where this project will be, this is a continuation of day one that began thousands of years ago, and it's just now a more modern use of that energy source.
Shell was recently added to this team to support the process of drilling a well that could be used to produce renewable energy for industrial heating in the Terrace area. Thompson explained how Shell's support can impact the project.
The agreement with Shell and Kitsilis Geothermal really unlocks over a decade worth of trying to best understand the geothermal resource in the area and then also best understand how to use it. And so we're really excited that somebody has experience in the energy industry, you know, both locally and as well as internationally and globally, also sees some promise in our approach. And so what the agreement will help unlock is really best understanding the technical parameters that the Borealis and Kitsilis Geothermal have been working on for the decade, as well as commercial opportunities.
Bringing renewable energy to industrial operations isn't the only objective of the project, though. Thompson explained that producing geothermal energy could have many different outcomes for people in the Terrace area.
I think the real magic of geothermal is that it can just unlock a lot more, not more than the energy. So certainly there's the rural or indigenous economic activity angle of it. It is the smallest footprint of any energy project. So megawatt per megawatt, if you're talking electricity, or gigajoule per gigajoule, if you're talking leaving as heat, we are kind to the earth. We work with earth and our footprint is very low. So you get all these kind of like rural and local and distributed energy benefits, all for the same energy experience that your customer is going to have.
Currently, there are plans to start drilling in 2024, though Thompson said that they want to take their time going forward to ensure the project is fully successful.
Support from Shell will help lower the overall risk of the project, which Thompson hopes will open the door to more investment opportunities. Back in January, KJI also received $500,000 in funding from the BC's First Nations Clean Energy Business Fund.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
Now take a quick peek at stories produced by our journalists all over the country in this first edition of our Periscope. Journalist Surjit Atwal is in Abbotsford, BC, and he regularly interviews city councillors, federal and provincial politicians and activists. But with the upcoming Conservative Party election, he spoke with former Prime Minister Jean Charest and last week with Conservative candidate Leslyn Lewis.
I'm not a career politician, so I look at politics from more of a informative perspective rather than just talking at the citizens and the members, giving them information that they can make informed choices about the policies that are going to affect their lives.
In Knowlton, Quebec, Taylor McClure was present at the third edition of the Knowlton Film Festival. The festival kicked off on August 25th with the film Coda, Life with Music, by philosophy teacher and now filmmaker Louis Godbout. This film is a testament to his sudden career change.
Actually, it's philosophy's fault, you know, because at the time I was kind of immersed in the Nietzschean ideas and I traveled to Switzerland, to Sils Maria, to make, you know, a pilgrimage with my family on Nietzsche's, you know, following in Nietzsche's footsteps, because that's where he wrote many of his great works. And just being there and having these ideas in my head and a lot of, I was also listening to a lot of music at that time. And so these things kind of, you know, blended together with the landscape. And I thought, wow, it would be great to have a movie where the protagonist, you know, goes on a journey and ends up here in Sils Maria. So.
And as some of you know, we have many journalists working out of British Columbia and a few on Cortes Island. Loni Taylor is one of them. Friends of Cortes Island Society is a conservation group on Cortes Island. And this group is spearheading a project to monitor the sea star wasting syndrome. The disease appears to look like the sea star is melting.
And what they're trying to do, they're trying to find out what is the status of sea stars following the sea star wasting syndrome that happened in 2014. You may remember in the news there was a big loss of sea stars. Suddenly they basically get this syndrome where they literally look like they're just melting. And there's research trying to understand why that's happening, possibly because the water's warming and there's more spread of disease. And so anyhow, there's a big impact. researchers are really interested in finding out, okay, what's happening now? Are they recovering? Are they getting worse? What's going on? There's certain, the sunflower star, which is one with multiple legs, that one almost got wiped out by the wasting syndrome, finding a few baby ones around the place, but the larger adults have just disappeared. So it has had a big impact.
And the world's largest needlepoint uniting Canadians was displayed in Kingston, Ontario. It was built 22 years ago by some 650 volunteers. It is considered to be the world's largest welcome mat in 100 different languages. Karim Mosna spoke with Vahid Sadati.
People from different backgrounds, different ages that came together, it shows the welcoming of Canada. And to me, this is something that I wanted to give back to Canada, my new home. People love to be part of it, to be proud Canadian, and to be proud to show that, yes, we can work together, regardless our age, background, religion.
Mr. Sadati is hoping to find a permanent home for the mat. These stories and many more on canada-info.ca.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
To close up this edition of Viewpoints, we turn to the forests of Revelstoke, British Columbia, for a mushroom foraging trip. We'll walk through the forest with Corinne Lynn Cancellieri and Danny Berzinkoff, who just love mushrooms. They love searching for them, identifying them, eating them, teaching other people about how to recognize the best ones, and even painting on them. Cancellieri and Berzinkoff live off-grid near Peachland, BC, but in September, which is prime mushroom picking season, they both travel every weekend to reach Revelstoke, some 225 kilometers away, and take people out foraging to find chanterelles, pine mushrooms, lobster mushrooms, oyster mushrooms, chicken of the forest, and many more. Megan Dooling, our Revelstoke journalist, did just that in the company of Corinne Lynn Cancellieri and Danny Bersinkoff.
I love going mushroom picking in Revelstoke's backcountry, especially the Akokolux area, because I know how many pine, honey mushrooms, chanterelles, everything you can imagine, they're in this inland temperate rainforest area.
It doesn't take long to get into what Corinne calls the backcountry in Revelstoke. Corinne started the North Star Survival School after her husband died in a boating accident on the Columbia River 3 years ago. She wanted to create something good out of something terrible and to teach people skills and knowledge to survive when they're outside. She learned at 2 years old how to pick mushrooms, which ones to pick. Her parents taught her.
So you see we're moving into a forest with what we have here is a fir tree. You can tell because of these long pink or bright orange slices down the side of the bark. Fir trees are very corky and thick barked trees. That means they protect their wood during a forest fire. Okay. More fir. What we want to be in is a fir hemlock forest. So that's exactly what we've got here. First one we found is a little artist conch. You can tell because it looks like it's got cinnamon on it. Like somebody's thrown cinnamon at it. Look at that one. That one's beautiful. That's a great specimen. So every year these polypores get a new ring. And I hate pulling them off, but sometimes I do. Let's keep looking. We're just gonna comb these woods.
As Corinne walks along the ravine in a grid pattern, noticing every bush, tree, and mushroom, Danny hunches in the moss. What are you looking at, Danny?
I'm seeing a bunch of these little guys. So they make up. There's probably a big nest of mycelium under here. And we don't really. They're too hard to tell because they're so small. You'd have to get down with a microscope to tell the exact species of these, but they're all over, like right underneath your feet and everywhere, so they probably have a network grid of a root system that they're all talking to each other, saying there's people here looking at us, look good, right?
And when you see this, what do you know when you see something like this? Like, what does it indicate to you?
When you see varieties of mushrooms, like we've gone maybe 50 feet and we've found four variety of mushrooms, that means we're in a nice spot for mushrooms to grow. It's favorable conditions. We're getting some sunlight, lots of moisture because this is a rainforest, but we're getting some sunlight, but not all sunlight. Mushrooms like sunlight as much as people think, oh, they only grow in the dark. No, they need sunlight to grow, but not direct sunlight. They've got a nice covering shade. Is we'll walk past choice mushrooms that we didn't know were there because they haven't poked up yet. They get a little bit of rain like we had this morning or the last couple of days, and then a couple of days of sun, and boom, all your mushroom, a whole field of mushrooms will come up that we haven't seen yet.
Okay, so here's how we know this is turkey tail. We look up underneath and we see that at least a ballpoint pen put next to the pores, there has to be 3 to 5 pores at the end of a ballpoint pen, and that's exactly right. So these are turkey tail. Another thing you could tell is they're soft on top. They have like a little bit of fuzz, and they, like I said, those pores, they'll be white on the bottom, unless they're getting a little dirty and old, which is fine. And then these pores, there'll be 3 to 5 of them next to the end of a ballpoint pen. There's also going to be 2 distinct color changes. See how there's like an orange and a white? There's not just going to be variations of the same color. The turkey tail is a cancer fighter. It's also super high in antioxidants and super, super great anti-inflammatory.
So after you pick the turkey tail, what do you do with it to prepare it?
So we dry it out
or we just put it straight into a tincture. So like in vodka, I'll put it in with vodka and let it sit for 2 weeks. Then I take it out. I boil it very slowly and lightly on a pan to get some of the alcohol out of it. I'll add water and boil that off a bit. And then in the end, you get this thick extract. And I use that as medicine daily to avoid cancer, to fight inflammatory. What's that? Oh, you found witch's butter.
Yes.
Okay, so witch's butter is a jelly mushroom.
Just bright orange mushroom on a log, and it's quite slippery. Like, it's hard to pull off the log.
And witch's butter are a treat for just people out hiking. You can just pop them in your mouth, and there's super high numbers of vitamin D and antioxidants, and they give you some short-term energy, and all jellies are edible. So
that's so cool. It's totally a jelly on a log.
Yeah, orange jelly kind of looks like, you know, just a blob.
Talk to me a little bit, how about when you go into the forest looking for mushrooms and plants, how it kind of helps you see the forest differently?
Oh, when you don't know the things that I know, you go out in the woods and you just kind of step over all this stuff and you don't understand what it is until you find out, and then the whole world opens up to you in a whole different way that you've never seen it. And all of a sudden, there's all these amazing things.
Here we go, guys.
Our first chanterelles.
Oh, nice. I didn't even see it.
Our first chanterelles. Bazinga. Now, you can't really tell with this one. False. Or not false, sorry. These are chanterelles for sure. Now, you can see they've got that ruffled... Oh. Bug. They've got the ruffled edge around the bottom of the cap. You can see the decurrent, gills, but they're kind of tucked underneath, and it's also quite slippery. Because this is such a young specimen, it's got not such prominent decurrent.
Okay.
False gills. All right, so does somebody else want to just dig down and pop that out of there?
This ravine goes all the way down into that big one.
Yeah, I think we're going to follow it up a bit. And then we'll head down, because I've got a place in mind where there was some chicken of the woods last year, or the year before. Is everybody ready to keep going?
We walked in grids through ravines until we found the log with chicken of the woods from 2 years ago. It was too old to pick. Corrine and Danny will be picking mushrooms every week in September. I'm Megan Dooling.
Hope you enjoyed the fresh air. This completes this edition of Viewpoints. Lots of people to thank this week, starting with our journalists, Carrie Musna, Sarah Gouda, Morgan Boudin, Megan Dooling, Taylor McClure, Loni Taylor, Surjit Atwal, as well as their national coordinator, Maureen McEwen, and to the Community Radio Fund of Canada that produces Viewpoints, as well as its French counterpart, Point de Vue. My name is Boris Chassain. Happy to have you with us. Take care.
Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're attuned to Viewpoints.
Check out our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.